Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcasting Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. That is cageclub.me. Hey everyone, it's Chris here. Just got a little admin, a little warning, a little apology for you at the beginning of the show. So peek behind the curtain of Now and Again. Now and Again was conceptualized in June of this year. I rounded up a couple of friends who I want to record with, Nico specifically. I went to Joey of Cage Club, whose podcast I had guested on a couple of times, and I pitched it to him. This, in addition to episode one, were proof of concept episodes, basically, to show that it's worthwhile and people might want to actually listen to this. So what you're going to hear is like one of the first recordings of Now and Again before I knew what the hell I was doing. And because of that, it doesn't sound great. I've heard worse podcasts out there, but it's certainly not these sexy, dulcet NPR tones. It's a little tinny. It's a little raw. The conversations tend to drift a little bit. We didn't quite have the pacing of the show down yet. There's a lot of good stuff in here, I promise. If you've ever heard me talking to Joey before, you know that there's some good conversation to be had. So apologies for the sound. No apologies for the quality of the content. Next month, we will be back sounding as good as ever. Enjoy the show. It's winter of 1999. It's the hottest winter recorded in the United States. Napster is sued for copyright infringement. And Beanie Babies are the hot Christmas gift. And this is Now and Again, Volume 3, Side A. We play this song on the radio. We play this song on the radio. With us today, our guest is the man in charge of the Cage Club Podcasting Network, a man who did it all for the Nookie, Joey Lewandowski.
Well, I would just like to say thank you for having me, but also one of two. It's me and Mike Manzi, who might be on this at one point or another.
Absolutely.
Really, my brainchild and his brainchild together. So I, as much as I appreciate all the credit, I want to make sure he gets his due as well.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Cage Club Network?
So about a year ago, actually, like, you know, within a week of a year ago when we were recording this podcast, so early June 2015, Best Buy had a sale on Nicolas Cage movies, and I spent like $100 and I got like 12 of them. And that got me up to about 40 of the 80 owned. And I posted on Facebook. I was just like, look at this great thing that I just did. And somehow, I don't know why, but Mike Manzi was like, hey, you know, I would be interested in doing something with that. So he and I, over the next month after that, went out and bought all the Nicolas Cage movies. And so he and I, between August and January, did three a week. We did three in chronological order, three Nicolas Cage movies, watched each one, recorded a podcast about it, wrote a blog review of each. That's all on cageclub.me. And then when that ended, we were just like, oh man, it's sort of boring not doing like 25 hours worth of work a week. So we decided to go to Keanu. And then as we were doing Keanu, Chris here and Christian Larson came up with Monkey Club. And I also started Zack Attack. And we have, you know, it's just like this little podcast network of just, you know, my friends and I, the stuff that we're into that we like would be talking about anyway, we just might as well record it and then spend lots of our time editing those conversations and putting them out for people to listen to.
I'm glad for your own mental health to scale it back a little bit, but man, the quality and the quantity are both awesome.
Well, thank you. And I mean, you were on several episodes as well. So if you love Chris on this show, I implore you to go back and listen to the Pay the Ghost episode and other episodes. What other movies did you do with us?
I did Bad Lieutenant.
You did. Oh, right. One of our like top three probably movie that Cage has ever done. And probably one of the best podcasts that we did.
And the one that's not Ghost Rider, but is totally Ghost Rider.
Oh, Drive Angry.
Yes. Yes, that's it. So, yeah, we're on Now, Volume 3. It's summer of 1999. Whew. So where are you in your life, Joey?
So it's summer of 99. I was between 5th and 6th grades. I have the distinct privilege of being the last 5th grade class in my school district's history to ever be at the middle school. This is boring to everyone, including myself, but our school was growing at such a rate that they had to build like an intermediate school, which was going to be like 3rd through 5th grades or something. And so we were the last 5th grade class, last class to ever go 5th through 8th grade. So I'm between that. I'm still, you know, I'm on the verge of becoming the youngest kid in school again. You know, 2 years in a row, we're low on the totem pole. And, you know, it's the summer where probably playing a lot of N64, probably, you know, watching TRL a lot. That's sort of my summers back then, playing baseball. It's just sort of, you know, it's memories.
the internet hasn't completely taken over our brains just yet.
Right.
It's there. I'm sure I'm playing a lot of StarCraft and Diablo.
Sure.
Points. I'm also, I realize that I'm kind of hitting the point right now in my life where I'm starting to like music that isn't just stuff that my parents listen to or isn't just stuff on the radio. I have a very clear memory of around this time, summer of 99, I would be between 7th and 8th grade. And I remember owning an album by one of the bands that we're going to talk about. And it was thanks to my cousin. He played me one of their albums while we were playing Magic Gathering up in his bedroom. And that started me off on buying music for myself that wasn't just stuff on the radio. So this is kind of a pinnacle point in my music history. So I'm pretty excited to talk about it because it's really a turning point for me. And a lot of the stuff brings back memories. A lot of it, I had no idea what it was then, and I have no idea what it is now. We might not have gotten, you may have come on for pretty bad now. I would say maybe front to back, this is the worst one so far. But hey, you're probably used to doing some bad movies.
Well, what's weird about this is that this was the first now that I had. I don't remember buying music for myself. I think this was something that probably my parents bought us. Probably, you know, CD collection that me and my sister or my sister and I split. I remember having 3, 5, and 7. And I remember looking at this just for some reason. I don't know why. And I don't know why my OCD didn't like require me to have all the like fill in the gaps. Yeah. I remember we had 3, 5, and 7. I remember looking at the track listing for this one when you started up the podcast. I was like, oh, this is the one I want to do. And then as soon as I started watching the music videos for this, I was like, oh, like after like track like 7 or 8, there's like it's a dead zone. And even the ones before that, like the songs that I know, they're not great. And you know, looking at now too. You sent me that terrific TV commercial for Now 2. It's like the same artists that were on Now 3, but like they're the bigger and better songs. So just like, hey, Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys are still big, but like here's slightly worse songs for them. So it's weird that, you know, if I looked right, I think this is like the second Now to come out that year. I think like 2 came out in 99, maybe?
Yeah, they... 2 come out in 99. They start on a pace not long after this, if not this year, where they're doing 3 a year.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a little much, but...
Because there's not that much good music.
No, but even without that, there's still definitely some stuff that are baffling omissions to the now discography. Though I guess a lot of that comes down to record label rights and things like that we could never possibly understand.
This, I was looking up on Wikipedia, the Wikipedia entry for this one, at least, I don't know if they're for all of them, but, like, it's basically bare. I mean, it's just pretty much just a track listing, and that's the entire article, but I did notice that it said that this went double platinum, which means this sold 2 million copies, which is incredible, considering no actual music sells any copies of anything now. And so just to have, like, a mishmash of, you know, 18 or whatever, however many songs are on here, just random, you know, chart-topping hits with some glaring omissions. It's nuts.
Yeah, to put it into perspective, it's like this mixtape, this compilation is selling in 1999 what like Adele and Taylor Swift is selling now if they're lucky.
Right. And nobody else is.
Cuckoo bananas. That's where music was. You couldn't just get every song you wanted at your fingertips, and that's why this stuff was so important, and why it sold so well. And the first song we're going to talk about was goddamn everywhere in 1999. It's All Star by Smash Mouth. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. And now everyone's got it in their head, and I'm sorry.
What's really kind of coincidental, I don't want to say it's weird, but this song still hasn't gone away, and I was at a AAA baseball game a week ago, not to brag, but I was at a AAA baseball game, and this song came on the stadium loudspeakers, and there was a dad with a kid who must have been like 5 or 6, and the dad probably, you know, our age, and he's singing along, like trying to impress his son, and it made me so angry, because he was like doing it in a way that like, he's like, hey, look how cool I am, I know all the lyrics to Smash Mouth's All Star, and you know, that might have been cool in 1999, but after you heard the song for probably like the third time in 45 minutes on the radio, it's just painful. Like, it's, ooh.
You would hear it in movie trailers for Shrek movies, and the video has cameos by the Mystery Men, if you remember that movie.
Yeah, I remember that movie. This is, like, I didn't know, was this song, like, not written for that movie, but, like, do you know anything about that?
From what I understand, it was on the Smash Mouth album, and it just got used for that movie first, and then it was everywhere, and every movie used it, and every TV show used it, and I don't understand it. And I guess I could see what you're saying about, and why it's showing up in Shrek, and why, like, a father would sing to their kids. It's, like, very close to being a kid's song. It's got that catchy little hook. It's got "you can do it" positivity lyrics. Everyone gets a ribbon kind of the song.
Yeah.
But revisiting it now with all of those years between how ubiquitous this song was, and, I mean, now where it's, kind of a, maybe not a footnote in pop culture history, but maybe an actual note. What was it like to revisit it?
It reminds me, I just heard another podcast talking about the song "One Week" by Bare Naked Ladies. It kind of reminds me of that, where it's just like this song that you can't escape. And it's kind of, I don't know if fun is the right word, because I don't think it's fun to revisit this song, but it sort of brings you back to a time where everybody knew this song, and everybody to some extent probably liked this song. And I don't think you can really, I don't think there's anything to hate about this other than it just being overplayed. Like, it's not, you know, a great song. It's not anything super special. It's just sort of poppy nothingness. It's kind of like cotton candy. And it's not bad. It's just tired. And just because I've heard it probably more than, I don't know, maybe the rest of the songs on this album combined, like, it's just, you can't escape it.
Yeah, I remember Smash Mouth getting big with "Walking on the Sun" first. And that was just a song that sounded different than everything else that was on the radio. So I think that drew people's eyes to Smash Mouth. And then this just got licensed by everything. And I was going to say it was all gravy for Smash Mouth from there, but I don't think there wasn't a lot left in that tank. They burned out early.
The lead singer is Mark McGrath, right? Is that right?
No, Steve. No. Something. Mark McGrath is Sugar Ray.
Oh. Well, whoever this guy is, he kind of looks like Guy Fieri a little bit, maybe?
Oh, my God. I made that note, too. I said that he looks like the middle Pokemon evolution. The kid who pukes all over the place and Stand By Me. And then this guy, and then Guy Fieri. That's the evolution.
That's pretty spot on. And he loves, like, in the video, he just loves mugging for the camera. Like, the whole thing, for some reason, is him going around, like, saving people. Like, there's, like, a Miss America pageant winner or something trapped under a bus. There's, like, a kitten in a burning house.
Yeah.
And he's going around saving everyone, literal save the cat moments. And instead of doing his thing, he's, like, you know, singing for the camera and, like, mugging for the camera. Just like, well, dude, you know, if you're going to save these lives, get the work done and then mug in between.
Yeah, he's constantly pulling his sunglasses down like, it's a living, as he goes and, like, runs into a burning building and then ladies flock to him. He also does, I noticed he does a lot of rap hands, which is interesting considering this is not a rap song.
Yeah.
A lot of mean mugging at the camera and throwing his hands out at it during the performance parts.
What's also kind of, I don't want to say it's not interesting, but the first three songs, at least on this playlist of videos that you put together for me to watch, they all have the band performing the song. And I was wondering if that's like a thing that like was ubiquitous, you know what I mean? Like that there's this narrative of him going around town saving people, but the music video still feels the need to cut back. Like, hey guys, these guys play their instruments. Trust us. Like, don't worry about it. But then once we get into, you know, not to give some spoilers, but like Enrique Iglesias and Britney Spears, who really have no interest in playing instruments, they're just singers, that sort of goes away. But like, I don't know. It's a weird kind of thing that, let's show the band playing their instruments because they're actual musicians, guys. Like, don't forget that.
Yeah, and this was really the era where that was kind of going to stop. You got a lot of that in the 80s and the 90s where it would kind of just be a performance video. Maybe it would have some kind of side story. The first thing that popped into my head was Whitesnake's "Here I Go Again" video, which is just them playing, but then the sexy girl dancing on top of the car. Like, we just cut between that. And you didn't have to have a whole lot of story in videos. And grunge kind of added some of that, but now we're getting to the point where image is everything because videos and TRL is so huge.
Right.
That bands like, say, Fastball, like, they're not going to survive the MTV wave that's coming because they're not marketable faces, and that's a shame.
And that's something that you definitely notice watching all the videos or these songs, is that they all, aside from the fact that they're all like super 90s, they're all like, I think they're all 90s because they all have like this image. Like when we get to the Backstreet Boys video, they're all like in these matching uniforms, these matching outfits, they all have these hats. And you know, even if they're not necessarily selling a product, they're selling an image, they're selling, you know, whatever it is that their manager wants them to sell. And yeah, I mean, like a band like Fastball, who has one of the more listenable songs on this entire Now That's What I Call Music.
Absolutely.
They're buried. They're the last song on here. Like, if you get to them, like, congratulations that you got through, like, the back half, the R&B sludge of the second half of the album. But, like, you know, it's like, hey, this is a big song, but, like, you probably don't care about it, so we're going to bury it at the end.
Yeah, and it's a shame. And, I mean, I was mentioning that I was kind of discovering my own music. A lot of that, what I was discovering was, I don't want to say punk. I would eventually discover punk through this kind of music. A lot of ska. I'll spoil who's going to be on here. Blink-182 is going to be on here. And one of those first albums I heard in that bedroom was Dude Ranch by Blink-182. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that would kind of be this rallying cry for, like, 3 years down the line, like, sophomore year of high school. Me, who's taking very seriously, like, this idea of punk rock and, like, oh, you have to have an image to get on MTV and pop music is garbage because they don't let the artists really be themselves and they don't give everyone a chance. I mean, like, it's true, kind of, but I mean, that stuff was never going to get played on MTV anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, and I'll talk about as the episodes go on, kind of how I found music to not be really serious. But yeah, we're hitting that point where you have to market the band and not just the music. And you know, it is a bit of a shame.
I don't really have like a point to follow that up, but I guess this is, I should mention, I meant to mention this earlier, that I'm still at a point in my life in 1999 where I don't really, like, I'm into music, but I'm just into, like, I don't know if you remember, you were in New Jersey at the time?
Yep, sure was.
So you remember PST?
PST.
97.5 PST radio station, or no?
Maybe listening to a lot of Z100 and, like, 104.3, because, like I said, a lot of it was, either if I was in the car with my mom, it would be like she'd let me listen to my stuff, and that'd be Z100. Because even like before this, you're getting like No Doubt, and you're getting maybe not Nirvana at this point, but you're getting No Doubt and stuff like that. If I was with my dad, it'd be classic rock. So no, I don't know 95.7.
97.5 PST, and that became 94.5 PST. They were just, it was just, you know, basically top 40 radio, and they would have a countdown every week, and it was just pretty much all these songs, and that was all that we really listened to. And so I didn't really get into discovering my own music or figuring out what I really liked, you know, deciding for myself instead of letting the radio decide for me what I liked until college, really.
Wow.
Which is really late, I know. But even now, like, there's a stretch where, you know, thanks to friends in school and then honestly because of, like, Rock Band and Guitar Hero and, like, being exposed to this whole world of music that I didn't really know existed, there was a stretch where I was, like, really into music. But now, I mean, I still, obviously, I mean, it's the most boring thing in the world to say, but to say, like, I like music, but I don't really listen to that much music. I mostly, when I'm listening to things, it's mostly podcasts. I don't really spend a lot of time today listening to music. I mean, I know what I like, and I go to shows, and I go to festivals and stuff like that, but this was before my sort of explosion to the music world, and then currently, in 2016, it's sort of afterwards. I don't know. I've always liked music, as interesting as that is, but I don't know, it's just, this was definitely a period of my life where these were the songs that I was listening to, and, you know, I had a couple albums that I sort of tricked my mom into buying, like,
sure.
Huff Daddy and the Family.
Oh,
and,
wow, nice.
A Sublime, and, like, you know, I, because I didn't really listen to any music other than this, she didn't know what that was, and there was no internet to really look that up, and so she just sort of trusted me, and I was just like, oh, cool, and then, like, once I had it, I was just like, whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, for people around our age, it's a weird time, because music itself is transitioning, and we're transitioning with it, and because we're hitting that age. Do you have a good recollection of Lenny Kravitz, American Woman?
I remember the song from that time. I don't remember. I wrote down when I was watching the video. I don't know when I realized this was a cover. I think it took probably too long for me to realize that it was a cover. I also want to know if it's blasphemous to say that I think the cover is, like, I don't know if it's better, but it's definitely more fun. Is that fair to say?
Is it fair to say? I don't know. I think a cover, in my opinion, a cover should be familiar, but do something, bring something new to the table. And this really is kind of a dive bar cover of it, kind of just hitting all of the notes. I don't think it works especially well. I think Lenny Kravitz brings a charisma to the song that maybe the lead singer of the Guess Who did not have, because Lenny Kravitz is a really charismatic guy, and that comes through his music. But it's still kind of vanilla musically. Vocally, it's good, I think.
I don't know if it's necessarily... I don't know if it's good or unique, but I think he owns it, and I think it sort of becomes... I don't know if it's necessarily a better version, but I think more people know this than the original. And maybe that's just because it's more recent. I don't think it's just the recency effect, though. I think this is, like... I think he's made this his song. And not through any, you know, good or, you know, worthwhile reason, I think. I mean, maybe that's just where I... If this is one of those things where I don't know, maybe... I'm not sure if everybody thinks the way that I think, or if this is sort of like a me against the world situation, but I think that this is definitely one where it's, to me, this is his song. But I also, like, I've only heard the Guess Who song a handful of times.
This was also big at the time we're talking about, and the first three songs will all be songs that, maybe not the third one actually, but the first two songs are songs that were big on movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you recognize Heather Graham in the video, but...
I recognize Heather Graham in the video, because Heather Graham is one of my, like, all-time top five movie crushes. Like, she is just beautiful. I'm so in love with her, and I'm just like, why is she in this?
Austin Powers, too.
Yeah, I had to dig into it, be like, oh, okay, that's a thing now. And so I realized, I'm like, are all the songs on this album just going to be songs from movies? And no, that's not.
No, not all of them. But... Yeah, Heather Graham never really struck me as a... You know, I joked before about, and maybe this is why I thought of it subconsciously, the White Snake video, where I believe that was Tawny Katane is dancing on the car being a real sex bomb. Heather Graham never crossed me as that kind of a...
I mean,
she's beautiful, don't get me wrong, but she's just not like a video babe, which I think is a compliment in a weird, maybe backhanded way.
I think the problem is that, like, Lenny Kravitz is kind of, in a sense, like, a beautiful man, you know what I mean? And, like, and it's not like, it's sort of like he's the video babe, almost, you know what I mean? Like, he's not only the performer, but he's also like, hey, guys, like, look at me. And I don't really think I knew anything about him other than he was the guy who was with Denise from The Cosby Show back in 1999. But, you know, I can sort of see that, like, you know, if you have a band like Smash Mouth, who are just a bunch of schlubby guys you don't want to look at, you put Heather Graham in there and just, like, sex her up. But here, you know, Lenny Kravitz is probably, to some extent, being like, no, let's keep the camera on me because, like, I'm the real talent here.
Yeah, even the giant, like, desert crowd that he's performing to in the video, those people are not going crazy and dancing. They all look like they're paid to be there. They're really letting Lenny and his band own the stage.
Yeah. The whole time I was watching this video, I couldn't stop thinking this is, I don't know why, maybe just because, but like, we should probably talk about his Pierce Dick, right? That flopped out a year or two
ago. Oh man, I totally forgot about that. I have seen Lenny Kravitz's penis, yeah.
Yeah, and like, it's pierced, right? Or did I don't remember, I remember seeing it, and then I remember, I mean, I could Google it. I don't really want to Google it, but I can.
I think that has to go in the show notes.
Lenny Kravitz Dick. It's a, I don't know if it's pierced or not. There maybe, I can't really tell. I'll let you decide. We report, you decide.
Yeah, he's got, you know, based on that picture, he's got a pretty ripping dick. And speaking of that, there are quite a few ripping nips in this video too. This is, all of these videos, it surprised me how many videos just focused on like cleavage at this time.
Well, this is also a time, we're going to get into it, I think, in a big one when we get to Britney, but, like, this is a time where we're, like, sort of beginning to sexualize everyone. And I think, as you talked about in the first episode of this show, we're just a couple years away from Nipplegate, right? And so, like, we're in this sort of explosion of, it's not even, like, softcore, it's just, like, it's, like, before softcore, it's just, like, you know, you have all these beautiful young people, like, desperately trying to be sexy and, like, trying to figure out what's okay to show on TV. And so there's a lot of cleavage. There's a lot of abs. There's a lot of just, like, you know, body parts accentuated that now, you know, it's just sort of weird to look back in retrospect.
Yeah, my parents really didn't like me watching MTV. Not now, but when I was younger, like, during the grunge times, during Beavis and Butthead, they didn't like me watching MTV. it's really now that they, if they were upset about like the human body, this is the time they should not have let me watch MTV. There must have been so many sexual awakenings that occurred while just watching some music videos. Even the All-Star video had just like babes for no reason. Almost all of these videos that we're going to talk about kind of do just have, hey, you know, here's a curvy lady.
Yeah, I remember I was not allowed to watch MTV growing up. I don't remember when that changed. I remember being able to watch TRL. Like, I remember looking forward to TRL every day. I don't know when that changed, but I think MTV was just like this beacon of like questionable content for parents who didn't know enough. And when they, you know, I guess, I don't know, because you're right. Like, I remember very vividly, and I'm surprised that, I don't think it's on any of the now ones, but, you know, Tom Green, the Bum Bum song, you know, that is just the peak of, like, stupidity and everything. And I remember being able to watch that. So I don't know what questionable content I was being sheltered from leading up to that point, or leading up to the point where women are grinding on Ricky Martin's body. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
I don't know what was so bad before, you know, Kurt Cobain wearing plaid and just like shred. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm being sheltered from.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense why in the early to mid 90s my parents wouldn't let me watch MTV when it didn't get really. I guess we had some stuff like Wicked Games by is that Chris Isaac, I think.
Oh, you mean Wicked Game that's in three different Nicolas Cage movies?
You would know.
I wouldn't know.
That's a video that's just like pure sex, and that's early 90s. But I think that was the exception. I think there was a lot more like gross dudes in flannel at the time. It's really now when, like I said, as it starts to be image over substance sometimes.
Well, do you think that that's a function of the era? Like, do you think that's like, you know, late 90s versus early 90s? Do you think, like, okay, so maybe it's all just one point that I'm trying to make one way or the other, but like, did we get to a point where we created these pop stars, or was it these pop stars that came around and created the image? Like, because at this time, we have Britney, we have Christina, we're going to have Mandy Moore, we're going to have Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and 98 Degrees, and we have all these, like, you know, beautiful young people that they want to show off something. Like, did we create them, or did they just come along and create the image?
I'm going to guess we can trace this back to Madonna. Because when she first came out, she was not over-sexualized. You know, people are, you know, people had a problem with, like, the Like a Prayer video, but I think that was more for the religious imagery than everything else.
Okay.
Once she became Madonna, and she was able to do her own thing, she started doing a lot of the S&M really sexual stuff. And I wonder if this is both a response and a continuation of it. Because as we'll talk about later, a lot of the times these don't quite know what to do when the person that they want to sexualize is the performer. The videos have a lot of trouble with that. But let's save that for when we get to Miss Britney Spears.
Yeah, coming up soon, but not yet.
Side note, thinking about it now, looking back, is Austin Powers funny?
Okay, so that's a good question. I think in my mind, Austin Powers gets lumped in with all those movies like Borat that everybody quoted to the point of nauseam.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Whether or not they're funny is sort of irrelevant now. They're all terrible artifacts of a bygone era where I watched the Ali G show before Borat became a thing, and I remember loving Borat and Bruno, and then like popular culture took it and just sort of bastardized it. And like, Austin Powers was one of those movies where I had to watch at a friend's house because I wasn't able to watch at home. And I remember liking it because it was sort of the thrill of seeing something I shouldn't see. But I also remember watching it, and even like in that age range where I was 11, 12, whatever, being like, oh, this is stupid.
I was a big fan of the first Austin Powers. And if I went back and watched it, I would think it would hold up because that's a pretty good send up of spy movies. I think the second one, and especially the third one, kind of, like you're saying, it got into its own mythos almost. Like, it realized the pop culture wave it created and wrote it to negative effect.
I never saw the third one. I don't even know. I know I saw the first one. I'm pretty sure I saw the second one. But it's also one of those things where just like, I don't care. Like, there was I guess this is also a time in my life where I'm beginning to start hating things that everybody else loves, which in a way was a good thing that I wasn't, you know, I was able to sort of make my own choices, but it also, in terms of like movies, like that also led me to down a path where I would ultimately avoid every Judd Apatow movie because everybody, like if I never hear someone say, you know how I know you're gay? Yeah. Like, and I remember like everybody and just, you know, people whose opinions I respected, but also just like all douchey frat bros and everybody quoting that movie and being like, oh, I want nothing to do with that. Like everything with Judd Apatow, everything with, you know, Seth Rogen, everything with Ben, not Ben Stiller necessarily, but, you know, Vince Vaughn, all those movies, I'm just like, oh, like, I don't want any of this. And so I missed out on some good stuff, but I also saved some of my brain cells, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just talking about how, like, our parents wouldn't let us watch certain things, and maybe now is when they should have been more vigilant. I just realized that if this was for Austin Powers 2, and we're in the summer of 99, my birthday just passed. I mean, that birthday, this year, 1999, my parents took me and, like, six friends to go see Austin Powers 2 on opening weekend. That's definitely my birthday that year. That's a weird memory that I just had and completely had forgotten about until this time. I guess that's the power of music, power of the show.
I only had one birthday party at a movie theater, and I was actually thinking about it while I was watching his videos because the movie we saw was sort of similar to one of the songs we'll talk about at the very end, a song that maybe could have been on but wasn't. Spoiler alert for the very end of the second part of this podcast, but Vertical Horizon, Everything You Want. I saw Vertical Limit, which I don't remember anything about. It was some mountain climbing movie or something, and I think I might have fallen asleep in theaters. That was definitely, might be, I don't even know.
Is that a skydiving movie or a rock climbing movie?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm going to look it up right now. It came out in 2000.
I don't know. I think I'm thinking of something with, what's his name from Two and a Half Men? What's that guy's name? Charlie Sheen. I don't think I'm thinking of the same thing.
A climber must rescue his sister on top of K2, one of the world's biggest mountains.
So not Cliffhanger.
Not Cliffhanger. And it came out in December 2000. So a year after Now 3 came out, I had my birthday seeing Vertical Limit.
Ooh.
And a movie birthday is like sort of weird. I guess it's sort of the same thing, you know, a little bit older when you're in high school or whatever, you have like a movie date. Like it's like, yeah, you're with people you sort of want to spend time with, but like you can't talk to them. Like it's just like a weird, weird situation.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that a dinner and a movie is not a good date, or movie and dinner, depending on the order you do it.
It's definitely not a good first date. Maybe like a second or third date. Who knows?
Have you done the dinner movie first date before?
No. What have I done? I did
once.
One girl in high school, I went to, the first time we really hung out, we went to a movie, and then we, like, walked around the mall afterwards, so we sort of had that situation. I don't know. It's weird, though. It is weird, because you want to save dinner and a movie for, like, when you're tired of talking to them.
I have a distinct memory of taking a girl in my senior year of high school on a, could have been junior year, no, it was senior, to Spider-Man 2 and coffee at a Barnes & Noble.
Ooh, how romantic.
Not a good date. Not a good date.
Even though it's probably the best Spider-Man movie.
I was going to say, at the time, it was probably the best comic book movie. That wasn't maybe Blade 2. But anyway, speaking of movies, I for a second thought that this song was in American Pie. That was a different song off this album. This song is Blink-182's What's My Age Again? Time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. What did you think of this song going back to it? And were you a fan of Blink-182 at the time that they were big? Like, right around now, they're running around naked. They're wacky dudes. They're wacky brats. And what'd you think of them?
They're talking to the nurse who's on the cover of this album.
Yes, more tits for the video.
I don't remember. I don't think I've ever listened to a Blink-182 album from start to finish. I was never really into them. I remember liking this song. This is the first of the three videos that I actively remember seeing on TV, I think because it's so memorable. I mean, Smash Mouth's All-Star is just whatever, and Lenny Kravitz just rocking out on stage. This one's just three naked dudes running around town getting into trouble. I don't remember if because it was like controversial or just because it was funny. I don't remember why I remember it. This I liked it back then. I still like it now. I mean, it's sort of a nothing song. I mean, if you want to get deeper into it and about, you know, growing up and stuff like that, but I like it. It's a fun song, I think.
I like that riff that starts the song. I like the harmonies at the end, especially considering at least one of the dudes in this band could not sing. They always manage some pretty decent harmonies for their albums. I think Mark Hoppus is a a really good pop punk songwriter, and I think that still holds up to this day. I think he just knows how to put four chords and the catchy melody together really, really well. And Travis Barker, this was his first album with the band, and he's a really good drummer. And yeah, this video and this song were a big deal to me, because I think at this time, if you liked rock music, you had two choices, or else you were stuck with, you know, the TRL, boy bands, Britney, Christina kind of stuff. You could go with pop punk, and you could like Blink-182, or you could be like, and we'll talk about this later, you could be a Family Values Tour kind of kid. And the songs like What's My Age Again, I kind of more spoke to that kind of pop punk ska. I was starting to get into the Ramones at this point. And I was, you know, I was a bratty punk kid. In years, I would have Liberty Spikes and wear Converses with Argyle socks and Dickies shorts. Yeah, I chose the Blink-182 side. And looking back, I think this album of theirs is probably, I think it's easily their worst produced one. And I think it's overall one of their worst albums, even though it's the one that really blew them up and broke them.
What's the name of the album that this is on? Enema of the State.
Yeah.
Was that, when did the movie Enemy of the State come out? The year before, probably?
It had to be before this.
Yeah, it was the year before. That came out in 98. So this is, you know, Blink-182's controversial follow-up to the Will Smith hit, Enemy of the State.
Yeah, it's a fine song. It's you're right, it is a nothing song. You can laugh at it a little bit. They really did get kind of pigeonholed into being those, like, those brat kids probably a few years too deep into their 30s.
Yeah, I remember, like, their songs. This is one of those bands that, you know, I've never listened to a full album of theirs, but because of Rock Band and stuff, I know their singles, just because of the radio, I know their singles. So songs like Damn It and stuff like that, like, I like those songs.
Damn It is, I think, an undeniably great song.
It's just this one, like, I feel like the whole thing with Now, I don't know if this is going to be deep or very shallow, but, like, the name Now, that's what I call music. I mean, the whole point is, like, to say, like, what's popular now, but, like, it's also pretty much just highlighting songs that are only going to be big now. Like, it's they're not picking anything with, like, lasting substance. And maybe that's just because the 90s were kind of a rough decade for music. Maybe between, like, Nirvana and Radiohead really taking off, there's not a lot. There's sort of, like, a little bit of a wasteland. Or maybe that's just me not really knowing what music is from the 90s. I mean, there's alt stuff, and we'll get to Garbage in a little bit, and Garbage was really good in the 90s. But I feel like these songs that we've talked about already and that we're going to be talking about soon, they were obviously undeniable hits, and they're all these songs that we still remember today, and that, you know, in some weird, they're going to be like oldies that we're going to play. Who knows, you know? They don't mean anything. There's no substance to anything that we've talked about yet.
Pretty much. As much as I think this is a fun song and better than a lot of the Blink-182 songs that we'll talk about on this podcast, which, I mean, maybe isn't saying a lot. Yeah, I mean, if I heard this on the radio, I wouldn't turn it off. I could definitely sing all the lyrics to it, but there's a lot of embarrassing songs I could sing all the lyrics to. Ah, fuck that. I'm not embarrassed about the fact I know the words of the song. Fuck anyone who thinks I'm feeling less than for that. And, you know, hell. They were very of their time, but I'm excited to hear. They've got a new album coming out soon, and I've listened to every album they put out just because, you know, I feel like I have some sort of loyalty to them.
Sure.
They pushed me in a direction where I'd start to like music for myself. And I'll always appreciate that. I might not go buy it. I'm not going to see them live. They're playing here. I'm not going, but like, I'll never poo-poo Blink-182 just for that.
Okay, so their album is coming out on July 1st, and, you know, or maybe it's out already because this isn't going to be out by July 1st.
Yeah, that's true.
But their album that came out on July 1st is their first since 2011 and only their second since 2003. So, I mean, it's kind of a big deal that they're putting out a new album. I never, you know, I don't even think I've heard of Dude Ranch. I've heard of Enema of the State. I don't know. I guess I'm just not too familiar with Blink-182. I mean, you know them as these like wacky pranksters kind of, but beyond that, I don't really know them too well.
They have had a rocky couple of years recently. The guy, Tom, the guy with the higher pitched voice, who sings like All the Small Things, he left the band, and then Travis Barker was in that plane crash,
right.
And they got back together, and then Tom went insane and left. He's super into aliens and crystals now and stuff like that. They kind of kicked him out of the band and brought in someone from a band that I really like, so I'm curious to see how they work with him. Blink-182 is definitely a marker in my youth and my music history. I kind of want to go back and revisit Enema of the State, even though I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have nearly the same feelings for it as I did as a 12, 13-year-old. But that's okay. Well,
Well, the good news about Blink-182 and sort of the whole pop-punk thing is that you can probably listen to one of these albums in about half an hour, because the songs are all like 2 or 3 minutes long. Like, I remember, then, I mean, this is before the era that we're talking about, but like the Donnas, like, I think their second album is like 19 minutes. Like, it's like 11 songs. It's like 19 or 21 minutes. Like, it's crazy. They're all like these super tight, super fast punk songs, and like, it's over. And just, like, I don't know why, but I just kind of love that. Like, you can listen to an entire album, you know, 11 songs, and be done like quicker than you can watch a sitcom. Like, it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, the Ramones' Greatest Hits is like 35 tracks, and it's on one disc, and it's 45 minutes long or something like that.
I obviously never saw the Ramones play. And speaking of the Ramones, there's a Ramones Too Tough to Die about Johnny Ramone, a documentary with Nicolas Cage in it, so check that out. But I saw Ramones cover band at Coachella a few years ago, and it was just cool, because like, we're just walking through, and it was really early in the day, and it was like, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock, where there's just all bands that nobody's ever heard of. And then I hear somebody playing the Ramones, and like, you just go there, and I was there for 10 minutes, and I heard like 6 Ramones songs. Like, it's just, like, there's a certain amount of energy. Like, even if you don't like pop punk, I think there's something that you can't deny that, like, it's infectious. And like, I think you have to understand why people like it. That, you know, it might not be for you, but, you know, like, I don't understand, like, screamo, for instance. Like, I don't know why, aside from maybe, like, oh, this song so gets me. Like, just, like, there's nothing about the music quality, to me, that, like, I understand why people would like that. And no offense to you if you like screamo, I'm not sure.
No, not a fan. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think the best kind of pop punk, power pop, whatever you want to call them, bands, are the ones that capture an energy that means something, whether it's about just rock and roll high schooling or being a dumb punk kid. I think that's why they resonate more than like a band like Newfound Glory, which just sang about girls. It gets embarrassing to listen to at a certain point.
Yeah.
All right. The next song, moving on to from the pop punk invasion to the Spanish invasion, Bailamos by Enrique Iglesias.
I don't think I've ever seen this music video.
It's a CD video, is maybe the word I want to use for it. I mean, we're going to talk about the Backstreet Boys soon. And the Backstreet Boys, even though they were kind of, and Nico and I talked about this in episode one, even though they were a little older by the time they were getting big, but they were still called boys, they tried to market them as boys, where it seems like Enrique Iglesias wants to fuck women. Like, they're boys, he's a man. And he makes that very clear in this video.
How old was he at this time?
I do not know. I know that I would say that in my own extremely white northeastern knowledge of Enrique Iglesias, it's like he was most famous for having this weird mole on his face and also having sex with Anna Kournikova like forever. They were together for, I think they might still be together. I don't know. I just remember at a time when Anna Kournikova mattered, his name always came up with her.
He was 24.
Wow.
When this music video came out.
He was probably younger than some of the Backstreet Boys at this time.
He had received surgery in 2003 to remove the circular mole from his face.
Oh.
He worried that it could become cancerous.
Okay, and, sure.
Yeah, he dated Anna Kournikova from 2001 to 2013.
That's a long time in the celebrity world.
And then 2014... media outlets reported they were still together or back together, so they might still be together. Who knows? And he built a $26 million mansion. So that's Enrique Iglesias. I mean, you know, him just, like, creating, like, sexy-ass music in 1999 set him up in multiple ways pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll never say no to, I don't know what the word for it is. I don't know if flamenco is right, but, like, that Spanish, like, nylon strings guitar sound. Like, yeah. I'll never say no to a solo with the Spanish guitar.
Do you know Juanes? Juanes?
I think I remember the name from rock bands.
He did Me Enamora, which I'm probably butchering because I don't really speak Spanish. He's sort of, I guess, more of a modern day. I guess we'll compare it later when we get to one of the biggest omissions, which is Living La Vida Loca. You know, that I feel like both songs are trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, look at this hot Latino guy and like all these beautiful women, but like this one's like, yeah, like, I'm going to fuck to this song. And, like, Living La Vida Loca is just like, okay, I'm just going to dance. Like, it's almost, that's almost more of a defining, you're talking about Backstreet Boys as boys. Like, Ricky Martin's sort of like music for kids. Like, this is like music, like, to get down to.
I would almost say, like, Ricky Martin appealed to, like, housewives. I feel like that was kind of his market. I don't know why I feel that way. It might be because he's a cleaner cut Enrique Iglesias. I mean, By the Most isn't a song about fucking. It's a song about dancing. But dancing has always been kind of a metaphor for just, you know, fucking. And I feel like that especially carries over in at least Latin imagery. Maybe white people using Latin imagery is that dancing basically equates to fucking. So, I mean, this is basically a song about fucking.
I think this song, of the four that we've talked about so far, I think this is the most forgettable. Like, I don't think, maybe just for me, like, I mean, All Star is never going to leave my brain, unless my age again. I mean, these are all, like, massive songs. It's the one that I remember the least of, but it's also the one I think so far is the most listenable to.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I was going to say, I think this is the most earwormy of all of them.
Earwormy in a good way, because I think All Star is probably the most earwormy, but, like, that's, you kill yourself earwormy.
Sure, fair enough. Yeah, no, I really like the chorus of the song. I think this resonates today, even if it's not Enrique Iglesias. I think songs like this, these kind of Spanish invasion songs, and we're going to see over the next couple of Now albums with, we're going to talk about two artists on this album. We're going to have, what's her name, Shakira coming up.
I had a huge crush on Shakira.
Oh yeah, how could you not? This kind of bouncing between like the English and the Spanish lyrics, and then re-recording, a lot of those songs were re-recorded for American markets to have the American parts. Pitbull is a direct descendant of that kind of stuff, and maybe that's like 2 years ago. It's not so much right now in 2016, but I mean, that sound, that Enrique Iglesias thing is still resonating, even up to, you know, 10 years later.
You mean Mr. Worldwide? Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide?
Vale.
What's also sort of interesting about, I don't even think it's necessarily, like, I do agree that, you know, with Shakira coming in and Jennifer Lopez going to be huge around this time, this is definitely, you know, the start of, like, a big part of not just, like, Latino music, but, like, mainstream music for white people. But what's also kind of interesting, I think, in this placement on Now 3, is that the first three, Lenny Kravitz is a black man, but, like, it's sort of just white rock music, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, you have the whitest band in the history of Smash Mouth, and then you have Lenny Kravitz, and you have Blink-182, and then it's like, all right, we gotta mix it up a little bit. Like, we have a lot of, like, white music. Like, let's put in a Latin song. And then, you know, we're going to have a couple more white songs, and we're going to have, like, an R&B song. So I do feel like Now is conscious about trying to stagger things a little bit, which is interesting why later we're going to get to, like, three songs out of four are R&B. Like, it's weird. Like, it seems like they got lazy as this went on, but you can really tell, I think, at least in the first half of this disc, you know, they had a reason why they sort of structured things the way they did.
So in the future, Now is going to go to a very strict format of the pop at the very beginning, R&B and hip hop in the middle, and guitar stuff at the end. Right now, they've only really decided on the R&B stuff in the middle, and it's a little bit more varied, but we're going to see in the future Now gets very, break it into chapters almost. They really split up the albums so that the people who are buying it for not the whole album, but for specific parts, will know right where to go. I think it would be better if they put more effort into the track listing.
It really feels like they put effort in and just, like, gave up. I don't know. And what's sort of weird is that this is the epitome of an album you're buying for, like, a couple songs. That I feel like we're going to get to a song later that I remember buying the album for the one song that's on here and not listening to the rest of the album. So I feel like, you know, with that mindset, it doesn't really matter where you put songs, because you're not really building an album. But also at the same time, like, you have this creative freedom to, like, you know, create this new narrative of the, like, different songs, because it's not like it's, like, you don't have to make it like a concept album, but I mean, you can sort of tell a story or, like, structure in a way that is interesting instead of just, like, jamming everything in there and just sort of letting it fly, like letting the chips fall as they may, which is sort of what they seem to have done.
Or at least write out a certain kind of energy. Like, yeah. Start it off hard, cool down, and then bring it up again. I think maybe that's what they try to do in the future. Related, unrelated question. Did you ever, you're a little younger than me, so maybe not a mixtape, but maybe burn a CD. Did you ever make a mix for someone you had a crush on?
No, I did not. It was definitely, we're going to get to a thing later that I remember, well, I'll just say it now, I guess. I remember when Living La Vida Loca was on the radio, I felt like every 20 minutes, if you wanted to, you could find it on a radio station. And I remember having a cassette tape and putting it in my dad's stereo and, like, hunting for the song so I could record the song. And I remember trying to make a mixtape that way, I don't know if I just didn't have the patience for it or was like just missing or whatever, but like I got so frustrated so fast. And it wasn't for anyone. It was just for me. Like, oh, I want to make a tape of like my favorite songs of this time. Like basically creating my own now. And like, I don't even think I got like the full Live and La Vida Loca recorded. I think I just like gave up in the middle of that song. I mean, I've made mixtapes just like for friends in general, but I've never like, hey, here's my heart and soul on, you know, 60 minutes of plastic tape. Like, love me. Like I never did that.
I definitely remember trying to pirate the radio as well. And I think DJs got wise to it at a certain point. So I remember I would get really frustrated because they would start the song in the background, but just keep talking right up until the exact moment the lyrics kicked in. And those motherfuckers. Now I've got Elvis Duran on my fucking mixtape.
Well, like as a radio DJ, that's a really cool and important skill to have. But as someone who's trying to like, you know, pirate radio and make your own mixtape and go screw yourself, radio DJs.
All right, so we're going to move on to Britney Spears, Sometimes. Not the best Britney Spears song.
No. All I remember about the song, this is a video that, like, I remember this music video very, very clearly. I think I probably have every Britney Spears video burned into my brain because I remember just, like, waiting to watch her on TV. If you told me, like, before I watched this video, like, describe for me the video for Sometimes, I would not have been able to describe. But, like, as soon as I started watching, I'm like, oh, right, the Sailor video. Yeah. They're not even necessarily Sailors, but, like, I just, like, this is the Sailor video.
It's the Dawson's Creek video for me. It's, like, a bunch of kids in, like, Gap khakis hanging out near a bonfire on a beach.
And they're all in white.
It's awful. It's clear that they didn't quite know how they wanted to market the female pop stars. Because, like, Nico and I talked about this in episode one, where with the NSYNCs and the Backstreet Boys and even the Hansons, even if they were, like, in real life men, they buoyed them up so that to these, you know, emerging girls, they were inoffensive and non-threatening. And that's what, you know, adult women mostly were not buying a Backstreet Boys album.
Right.
But for someone like Britney Spears, I think they had trouble marketing to both emerging boys and to the girls who were probably more buying the pop albums. So you get one song, like Hit Me Baby One More Time, where she's in a schoolgirl outfit and in like a workout thing in that video. And then here, she's in like a sweater and khakis and talking about how like, baby, all I want is to hold you tight. It's such a weird ping pong. And I mean, I don't blame them. There's no way to, I think, do that correctly. And I think it would take a lot of time for Britney Spears to kind of find her own voice in her music.
Well, what's also really creepy about this is that she's 17 when this music video comes out.
It's way creepier about the Baby One More Time video.
And she was like 16, I think, I remember like being in love with her. Although, side story for a second, did you and your friends ever have two sides, like in a Britney versus Christina battle?
No, not a friends thing, but I think we all kind of had a preference. But we were also little, like, we were young boys who were just learning how to jerk off, so we didn't, it was all fine. Like, all of it was good. Musically, at the time, I don't know what I would have picked. I think just, like, pure, like, 12-year-old boy gaze.
Yeah.
My preference at the time was Christina Aguilera.
I remember being Team Christina, and then after, you know, like 6 months or whatever, realizing that none of this matters and like it's all terrible music, but they're both attractive girls. And then I remember like thinking like a couple of years later, you know, in like the roller coasters of their, not even careers, just like their lives, like Britney was, I think, bigger than Christina and then crashed harder than Christina ever did.
Yeah.
But now is sort of like, I don't know if you've seen pictures of her like lately, but like she's, you know, for like, what's she now, 34? Like she's like sort of got a banging bod now. Like she's back. Like she's, you know, she's not necessarily making music. I think she's doing like her Vegas show.
In the Vegas show, yeah.
But like she's like back at like, you know, beautiful Britney. And like Christina, I feel like never necessarily reached the highs that Britney did. Also never really crashed as low. And like she was sort of hotter for longer. But now she's just like, you know, on The Voice. And it's just like, oh, okay, whatever. She's just sort of
higher highs and lower lows for Britney. And Christina always had the better voice though, for sure.
Yeah.
She never needed production, and there was a point in Britney Spears' career And it was kind of, we're talking the lower lows, like the Gimme More era, where she was more machine than human. But I think the best Britney songs are better than the best Christina songs.
I don't know how many Christina Aguilera songs I can name.
I can probably name three.
I do remember the video for Dirty was like a transcendent experience for me.
That was... I wonder if she was always kind of following Britney, because there was a certain point where Britney does like the I'm a Slave for You video, where it's just like, oh, she's not. It's just like, she's just sweaty and wearing a snake and surrounded by other sweaty dudes. And then Christina just like tried too hard with the Dirty video, but she also did the Lady Marmalade video before that.
I don't know if I remember that. I remember the song being scandalous because it's all about having a three-way. I'm sure I remember the video if I watched it now, but I can't really place that. I remember the Dirty video being like a big experience. I remember the Slave for You, and I remember Toxic being a very sexy video too.
Toxic, I mean, that's when I say like her, Britney has more memorable songs. Like Toxic was the one I'm thinking of. That is a jam that still holds up.
That's a great song, right?
Oh, that's that. I mean, I can't do it. It's such a weird little synth riff, but you know that synth riff. And it's a good one. And no, Britney's good, but this is not a good one. This is her seventh heaven period. I hate it. I don't miss group choreography in music videos.
Oh God, it's so bad.
It's embarrassing.
I'm trying to see. Okay, so singles. So this is her second single. This was like, so it was Baby One More Time.
Yeah.
And then oh wow. So in 98, the only one that came out was Baby One More Time. That was number one on literally every Billboard chart. Just crazy. And then Sometimes came out. It only went to 21 in the U.S. But that same year, she also put out You Drive Me Crazy, Born to Make You Happy, and From the Bottom of My Broken Heart.
I only know Crazy.
Yeah, I don't remember those other two. And then the next year was Oops, I Did It Again.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Stronger, I'm a Slave for You was 2001. Like, she's really never gone too long without putting it out. I don't know. Maybe Britney's had, like, lasting power. I don't know. I feel like she definitely had her moment. Like, this was her moment.
This is the beginning of something big.
Well, I feel like she started really high with Baby One More Time, and then there was this song. And maybe that goes back to what you were saying about the marketing problems, but, like, I don't know. Who is this for? Is this, like, for, like, Christian families? Like, you know, young Christian girls could be like, hey, Mom, like look at Britney. Like, she's different. Like, I can buy her album now.
Well, like how you were saying, like, you could get away with an album because your parents wouldn't know enough. If you were in, like, some sort of weird Seventh Heaven family, you could show them this song as a reason to buy Britney Spears' album, but not Oops, I Did It Again.
Britney's an enigma. Maybe we should do a Britney podcast. No, hard pass.
It's Britney, bitch.
It's Britney, bitch.
All right, so moving on from Britney Spears to more really disposable bubblegum pop is the Backstreet Boys with All My Love Is All I Have to Give.
Yeah.
I talked about it in the first episode. I don't like the Backstreet Boys. I never have. I think they have one song, and it's the same song, and it's not a good song.
I forgot all about this song, and then as soon as I started watching the video, I was like, oh, right, this song. And this video is terrible. The song is bad. In my family, my sister came down firmly on the NSYNC side of things.
As someone should.
And I think, I don't know if it was out of sort of like friendly, quote-unquote friendly rivalry, but my dad became, he started liking the Backstreet Boys. I think sort of to bust my sister's balls in a way. And I remember him being like really into them, you know, as much as a, you know, 45 or 50-year-old man or whatever at that time should have been into Backstreet Boys. Like, yes. It wasn't unhealthy. You know, I'm not going to say whatever. Take from that what you will. But I remember him liking them and my sister liking NSYNC and me being like, oh, I don't like any of this. And I think that the best thing that could ever have come from this in terms of staying power is that only one of the 10 has any kind of cultural significance today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he's in, Justin Timberlake is in Pop Star Never Stop Never Stopping. He's really funny in it, so.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it last night, so it's very good. That's something I want to do, like, it's because it's told like a documentary, so it's I guess it's like a mockumentary. I guess that's sort of how it's classified. But
you know, is it a straight up like a parody of the Justin Bieber documentary where like he'll do his? From what I understand, that's like him doing his tour, and then it'll cut to him like the real life of Justin Bieber. I'm just a Bieber. I'm just a kid hanging out. Blah, blah.
I guess that this is definitely like is that Never Say Never?
Sure.
I never saw that. Don't think I ever will, unless we do Bieber Club.
Yeah.
But
wait, what is Bieber Club going to be? It's going to be this and What was that movie that just came out where he gets murdered at the beginning?
Oh, that's what's it called? The Zoolander 2.
Oh, yeah, so you got two movies for Beaver Club.
And we could do his Comedy Central roast as well.
Oh, God, I hate those things.
Yeah, they're not great. They're sort of... They're worth watching almost just to see, like, the comedians. Not the celebrities, but the comedians that Comedy Central focuses or highlights. You know, for a while, it was, like, Natasha Leggero and Moshe Kasher and stuff like that. Beyond that, they're just pretty much terrible.
Yeah, they're dire.
Justin Timberlake... It's crazy that, like, in this time period where you have, like, Britney and Christina and, like, five Backstreet Boys and five NSYNC and however many in 98 Degrees, which we'll get to later, and, like, to think out of, like, all, say, 15 or 20 of them, like, one of them has talent?
I mean, I'm sure some of them have talent. It's just, it became a Royal Rumble after that when they all start having solo careers, you know. Highlander, man, the only one's going to survive that. Backstreet Boys always kind of focused on Nick Carter. NSYNC always was kind of the Justin Timberlake show. As we'll see, 98 Degrees is kind of the Jessica Simpson's husband show.
Yep.
And, I mean, Justin Timberlake just kind of took that ball, and he ran hard with that. Backstreet Boys, none of them... I really don't like looking at Nick Carter. I don't know what it is, but he gets up in this camera during this video, and I don't like looking at him.
There's so much... in not only this video, but a lot of these videos, there's a lot of just, like, mugging for the camera. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, like... Again, I guess it must be like the image that they're selling, but also at times feels like, oh, I'm going to like become bigger than the band, and so I'm going to get my face close to the camera.
Yeah, there always has to be in the back of these guys' minds, like, solo career, it's starting, right? Like, I'm going to be the one who gets out of the starting gate faster than everybody else. I don't know. I mean, they're all reunited now. NSYNC's, I think, the only one that hasn't stooped to a reunion tour, probably because they can't get Justin.
That's probably true. Although if they reunited, it would be bigger than anything else just because of Justin.
Absolutely.
This is also the first video on this disc that is difficult to get through. There's one point where they're all in suits with no shirt on, and they all have like the same hat in different colors, and they're all doing like
the
dance move. And I just looked down and just did not look up for us. Like, I'm like, I don't know. This is a question we've asked a couple times. I don't know who this is for.
It's for young girls, and that's
is it. It?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. It's we talk about how like they have to be, they're very non-sexual, non-threatening. But, I mean, this song is like, of many that are on here, it's a real like nice guy anthem, and I mean that in the most disparaging, like nice guy, friend-zone-y, that none of those are actual real things way possible. I'll be here when your boyfriend, who I don't like, makes you feel bad, like. This idea that he's a piece of shit because I'm so in love with you and creeping on you from the background and being there as your friend who just really wants to have sex with you kind of way. It's a gross song. But it's also to a young girl who doesn't get that yet, it's a romantic song. This song stops being cute and starts being creepy probably when you have that first guy who you think is your friend who comes out and says, I'm in love with you, I want to have sex with you.
But, you know, his love is all that he has to give. And without you, he doesn't think he could live. And if he could give the world to you, he would, but he can't. And his love is all he has to give.
They've got a bunch of slowly opening their arms as a dance move. That's what the Backstreet Boys have.
There's a lot of weird dance moves in these music videos that, like, aren't really moves. They're just sort of, like, choreographed gestures. They're like... Yeah. It's just like an action. It's not like a. It's not rhythmic. It's nothing. It's just sort of. Because like, there's no way that all five of them in any of these bands could dance, and so they're playing. So it's sort of have to like choreograph to the lowest common denominator. Like I can just imagine like how frustrating that would be for like Justin Timberlake to be like, you know, in a couple of years I'm gonna do Sexy Back. Like I'm gonna do all these different songs where like I'm just gonna bust a move on a music video, and for I have to like now I have to like stoop to the level of like JC Chazet or what, you know what I mean? Like I can't do this for too much longer.
Why can't you get the choreography on its own? It's not a great video. I also was grossed out by their like palette swaps, Smooth Criminal, Mortal Kombat kind of
costume. Yeah.
It's like if you don't watch the video, those of you who are listening, like imagine a Michael Jackson Smooth Criminal getup but with an open shirt, but underneath it they've got a shirt like of just different colors. So like you got Sub-Zero, Scorpion, then you've got like. The other
reptile,
Noob Saibot, and all of just the same thing palette swapped all the way down the line, and they're just mugging to the camera and talking about how nice they are, and it's fuck is, I don't like the Backstreet Boys.
And just the whitest of the white guys you could possibly imagine.
I don't like looking at Nick Carter. And then the guy with the big, like, the two earrings in his ear, he's apparently the oldest one, I learned, from Nico on the first episode. And I feel bad for that guy more than anything else, because he's the one who looks like he should not be in a band that has to do with boys anymore. He's the one who should be singing the Vilemosis and things like that. When you're looking at it now, it's like, oh, no, this dad's out of place.
Well, I wouldn't feel too bad for him, because there was probably a 3 or 4 year stretch where, you know, just a runoff tale from Nick Carter, just, you know, got him through whatever. There's nothing to really be sad about for them. Like, even if it's not necessarily what they wanted to do, if they were smart with their money, they're set for life just because of, like...
Oh, yeah. But that guy was married by this point.
So, oh.
Yeah, probably a mistake. But, I mean, good for him. But, I mean, if you got to be in this band that's touring as women are throwing themselves at you, you being the old guy who's married has to be kind of like... All right. Well, we've waxed nostalgic on Britney's and Blink's and BSB's. I feel like we're going to end up kind of kicking it up a gear and flying through a couple of these flyover tracks, I guess you'd call them.
This is the Iowa of Now 3.
Yeah. Casey and JoJo, Tell Me It's Real. And this is like, if you remember from episode 1, Casey and JoJo's All My Life, that's a great song. Yep. Instead, it's a little bit crafted, artfully designed to be like a first dance at a wedding song. It doesn't hold up super well. It's a little sappy. This is just like the worst sequel to that.
I don't remember this song or this video, and I was sort of hoping when I saw Casey and JoJo on here, I was hoping it was All My Life. I forgot that it was on episode 1. I think the bottom line is that this song is, whether it's real or artificial or what, it's just way too sexy for where I am in my life. And like, a lot of these R&B songs, like, what's weird about, I guess, not only popular culture, but like specifically about now, is that they're picking these songs for this album that, like, okay, the first one's like a bunch of songs like 10 or 12-year-old kids, like me, are going to be super into. And then all of a sudden you like just throw this like sexy song that like people don't really necessarily know, which is like, who is this? Like, not, I know who this song is for, but like, who is this for on this album? Like, why does this exist on this album?
Demographics, I think. I mean, me and Nico kind of talked about this in episode 1, where it's just like, they try to cover every base they possibly can. They try to really cast a wide net. I mean, on some tracks that even involves like the parents of the people who would listen to this album primarily. It's not like R&B wasn't a market in 1999. It's just we were young white kids from New Jersey and we weren't exposed to it. I mean, that's really what it is. If it didn't creep over into top 40, I mean, Tell Me It's Real might have been, and a couple of the songs later that I've definitely never heard of could have been huge, but not to me at the time. And that doesn't, that's not the reason I'm discrediting them at all. In fact, one of the songs that I'm going to talk about that I've never heard until right now, later on, I'm gonna say it's great. But Tell Me It's Real is just, it's just like the bad sequel to All My Life. It's the Austin Powers 2 to the Austin Powers 1 that was All My Life. It's not that great. Casey and JoJo are great at harmonizing, and they do that throughout the entire song, so that's cool.
They really know how to make, like, even though they're not making good music, they know how to make music sound good. Yeah. Which I think is probably, like, a marketable skill. This song, and then several of the R&B songs that we have coming up later, made me wonder, was there a black MTV? And I realized that that was BET. And so I looked into the history of BET, and it started in 1980 as apparently a program block on Nickelodeon. I don't know what that means, or how that happened, or how that came about.
Did Nickelodeon exist in 1980?
According to Wikipedia, it did.
Well, it can't be wrong if it's on Wikipedia.
Can't be wrong. And then 3 years later, in 1983, it became a 24-hour TV channel. And so that, you know, it went from just being like maybe a couple hours a day into its whole thing. But then I think really, even though we're close to this sort of turning point that I'm about to say that happened in 2001, I think that at this time, BET was still not necessarily like MTV, maybe. I don't know what it was, because there's never been a channel that I watched. But in 2001, Viacom purchased it from this guy, Robert L. Johnson, who was the owner of the programmer or whatever. So I think 2001 is probably when BET became the BET that we know it as. And so maybe in 99, they're just, I don't know where these songs existed, because I don't remember them being on TRL, right? You know what I mean? I don't know them. I don't remember them being necessarily on MTV.
No.
Maybe they were not.
I mean, I'm sure there was a Hot 97 equivalent radio station that was broadcasting from New York to the Tri-State area that we just whited our way past it. I mean, it's just 12-year-old, 10-year-old white kids wouldn't have listened to it unless they had influences around them that introduced them to it. And I mean, Nick fucking schooled me all about some of that stuff on episode one. He did have that background. And I mean, there's definitely, I think I'm the kind of person who says two things people can say that will immediately make me not like them. One is, well, why isn't there a white entertainment television? That person can go fuck themselves. And two, people who say, I like everything but rap and country, can also go fuck themselves.
What's crazy to me, I've never heard anybody say the first one, which thank God I've never heard the first one, because that just sounds like the worst person imaginable. But I've heard so many people say, I like everything but rap and country, or like, can't spell crap without rap. Yeah. That kind of mentality is the same thing that like boggles my mind when people are like, oh, I just don't like sports. It's like, okay, like I understand like you might not want to watch sports, but like you can't, like that's just like saying like I don't like music or I don't like movies. Like there's no way, I don't think personally, that you can just discredit an entire sector of entertainment.
Right.
And, like whether you're talking about like sports as a whole or music as a whole or within the world, I don't like rap. Well, like you probably don't like, you know, gangster rap, but like maybe you like Chance the Rap. Like I don't, you know, there's so many different kinds of everything. Like I don't like a lot of country, but there's some country that's like amazing. Like, you know, it's so hard to it's not hard, it's actually the opposite. It's so easy to discriminate against everything that's out there, but it's stupid.
Yeah, I think people who say that are people who are just fully admitting that they haven't bothered to look into any of that, and really that's more what they should say, is like, I've never really dabbled in rap or country. It's just like owning, like it's not really my thing. Like, but the fact that there's nothing out there for you is objectively wrong. Like, you would find something if you looked into it. It's kind of like a, oh yeah, grandma's racist kind of thing. You could almost, like, it's not right, but you can kind of excuse it from older people who just, like, they didn't grow up with rap, maybe. Like, I'm not going to expect my dad to find a Kanye song he likes. But for people our age to just discredit a whole genre of music, though I'm going to do that with the next song. I think it's a shitty thing to do. And it just sucks that there's probably some really good 90s R&B. My girlfriend introduced me to the song Pony by Genuine within the last year. And fuck, that song rules.
Wait, didn't you watch Parks and Rec?
Yeah, but I don't remember that song. I think the first time I actually experienced that song was Magic Mike. And then she was like, oh yeah, Pony. And I was like, no, I don't think I know that. And now I know that.
Okay, so me and Pony have I don't want to say we have a history, but like on Parks and Rec, Donna's cousin is Genuine, and he comes to perform, he performs Pony at the Los Sebastian, I think he performs at the Los Sebastian Festival or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's also in Magic Mike, which I still haven't seen the first Magic Mike. I've seen the second Magic Mike, where they sort of reprise Pony a little bit. One night when I was just around Austin, I was just like, I'm going to go to every bar, and I'm going to make sure that Pony plays. And so whether there's a jukebox or there's like great. I tipped one DJ $5. I'm like, play Pony next. He's like, all right. And so like 5 or 6 bars in a row, I just Pony play. Like Pony is a song that even if you don't know it, you love it. Like, I don't think there's, like, I don't know if that's necessarily like a, no, that's not true. It's a good song. Like, it's a great song.
I'm bummed. There's going to be Genuine songs on Nows that aren't Pony, and that makes me a little sad. But I'm excited to dabble more into Genuine. Maybe there's some good stuff there that I haven't heard. I mean, Pony's great, so.
Came out in 96. There's also a really great figure skating routine to Pony.
Stop it.
Evgeny Plushenko, who is this Russian guy who every time there's the Winter Olympics on, like every time the Olympics run at all, I become obsessed with the Olympics. But I love the Winter Olympics more than the Summer Olympics. And figure skating, I think, you know, I don't think it's effeminate. Like figure skating is just, I think it's just beautiful. Like I think it's my favorite of any of the Olympic sports. And the Russians like kick our ass out, and it's fine because they're incredible at it. But this guy, Evgeny Plushenko, skated to Pony, and he had this like fake buff body on, like sort of like, you know, like a Halloween costume, like a little kid would wear, like look like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
He's wearing that and skating like quote unquote shirtless to Pony, and it's incredible.
That is going straight into the show notes, so you guys can look for that below.
I'm going to send this to you now so you can see what I'm talking about. It is so good. Pony is a song that, like, has this, like, not mystique about it, but, like, when Pony comes on, like, there's one thing that's going to happen. Like, it's just, that sex in a song. It's just great.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good song, and this has been 30-year-old white guys defending the fact they don't know this Casey and JoJo song. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go out of your way to find the song. Just find All My Life. It's better. Next song is Rockefeller Skank by Fatboy Slim. Check it out now, the funk soul brother, right about now. And here's what I'm going to say. I really don't like the whole genre of music. 8 to 16 looping bars of the same background music in a sample for 4 minutes. And there's a lot of that. It's mostly the Fatboy Slim genre. I'm aware that it can be good because I like the song Around the World by Daft Punk, but this sucks.
This is another one on this list of, like, the band, like, not the music video that I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be Weapon of Choice because I wanted to see Christopher Walken dancing around in the air for a while. And instead, we just get this, like, weird, it's sort of like Breaking Bad minus Meth and Evil, or just, like, Pulp Fiction without any kind of flair or substance. Like,
yeah,
it's like a black dude with a hawk, like with an afro that kind of looks like Jules. All the girls seem to have, or at least one of the girls seems to have, like, a Mia Wallace haircut. And I'm like, oh, like, this is probably, like, you know, Fatboy Slim or whoever shot this video trying to emulate Pulp Fiction, or just sort of, like, have, like, this artsy movie quality. And it's just, I mean, I don't know if Weapon of Choice is a good song, but, like, that video is incredible just because it's Christopher Walken dancing around, like flying and dancing. Like, it's great. This is just, like, people walking around doing weird things.
Yeah, all these songs to me are car commercial music because it's 30 seconds of something that'll catch your attention, which is great for a commercial about cars, but it's not something, I don't understand how a human could listen to this for 4 minutes.
We both did, though. I mean, I listened to the whole thing.
I skipped it.
Did you really?
Once it got to about the third minute, I was like, man, next. Oh, man, do you remember MTV's Next? I just remembered that.
No?
It was a dating show?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Fatboy Slim. Cool job. Good job.
That genre of music that just, like, sample-based, same thing for 3 minutes, I get it by the first 45 seconds, so why am I going to... Well, I'm an old man now. Why am I going to waste my time listening to the same sample again? And, like I said, I think it can be done objectively well. Like, I don't love Daft Punk, but I recognize that they're probably one of the best at what they do.
Sure. Absolutely. I think that this song... I don't want to lump this in with Daft Punk. I think that's a separate conversation to have. But I think this song is catchy and, like, it's easy to like it unless you think about it. And then if you think about it, it's just like, oh, there's nothing here.
That's why it's a car commercial song.
If you're just, like, listening to it in the background, like, I think I could be convinced that I like this song, I think. I don't think it's a good song, but I think I could be convinced that I like it. I wouldn't want to actively listen to it, but it's also one of those things that, like, you know, if I listen to it once every couple months or once every year or whatever, like, oh, yeah, I like the song, and then that's it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I would, like, if I had to listen to this, like, twice a day, like, that's a lot.
I bet there's a lot of retail workers in 1999 who heard this song.
Oh, God, these poor people.
Yeah. How about Limp Bizkit and Nookie?
This was a song I think I liked it back in the day. I know for a fact that that's true, that I was dumb. I remember the kid who hated the most in middle school was this kid who thought he was, like, he was one of the popular kids, but he also thought he was, like, hotter shit than he was. And I remember he loved Limp Bizkit and loved this and bought a red Yankee hat, which is blasphemous to the point of no return. Like, that's just atrocious. As a Yankee fan, it's just horrible. And, you know, the puffy jacket and everything. And I remember he liked it, and so it was definitely, like, the cool thing to do to like the song. And so I sort of liked it in that regard, but I also hated it. Ooh, man, I think this is probably, of all the songs on this album, I think this is probably the biggest of that. Like, this song was, like, massive, wasn't it?
Chart-wise, no. But I think, again, the fact that we came from suburban Whiteville made it possibly the biggest song in our own little cultural zeitgeist. It wasn't, like, a massive Billboard. I think it was in the top 100, but it wasn't, you know, 3. Like I said, we were coming to this point where we had to pick a road, and if we wanted to like guitar-based stuff that was easily accessible, you had to go Family Value Store or you had to go pop-punk.
Limp Bizkit's a band where I know this song and I know Roland, and I mostly know Roland because it was the intro song, I think, on NHL Hits 2002 or 2003.
Oh, see, I was going to say it was the intro song for The Undertaker for a while. That's how I knew it.
It was on one of the NHL Hits. It was that, and then it was Bombshell by Powerman 5000. Like, those were two. Like, the NHL Hits games are incredible. Like, even if you don't like hockey or sports games or video games, like, those are just great games. And I remember one, like, Roland was like, they had like, this really cool, because one thing that sports games and sports in general has always done well is put together, like, great highlight packages for those kind of games.
Yeah.
And so it was just, like, this, like, incredible action hockey montage to open the game of, like, people just, like, getting, like, goalies getting laid out and just, like, huge hits and stuff like that set to Roland. But the long story short, bring it back to, like, why I brought that up, I feel like Limp Bizkit is a band that, like, is arguably, like, one of the biggest bands, at least in our suburban white world, that I don't know a third song from. Like, it's Roland and it's Nookie. I'm like, I can't think of a third.
I talked about what my prerequisites for a decent cover are. Right. I think their cover of Faith, the George Michael song, is not good, but it hits both of those to the point where I acknowledge it being an okay cover, if not a great song.
I have one of my best friends in the world loves covers. And I think he's just like fascinated by the possibilities that covers allow you to create. So there's this band called Karma Doza that did an entire album of B-52 covers. And it's like, they're sort of like, I don't know how to, like, it's just sort of like hard rock kind of, or like, it's not like, if their music was original music, I wouldn't listen to it. But because it's all like B-52 songs, which are all great, it's like this really interesting sort of like cross section. I have another friend who was in a metal band in college, and he explained to me, when I asked him like if they were ever going to cover something, he said that their band, it's sort of like what you said, like their band only covers two types of songs. Number one, it's songs that like are sort of like mainstays, like staples in the genres that they just like want to play. Or the second one is like songs that are so off base for like what they're known for that it's like a surprise. So like, you know, them covering like a Miley Cyrus song or something, just because like it's so out of their wheelhouse that to hear their take on it would be like, even if it's not good, or even if the song they're covering is not good or whatever, it's worth listening to. And so I agree. Like, I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard their cover of Faith. Faith is a great song. And now I sort of want to hear what they did with it.
It's got a lot of yelling, and that guy, and Fred Durst, like, warbly kind of singing, like that kind of thing going on there, that I really don't like. They do something. I don't think I know enough Wes Borland to say he's, like, an interesting musician, but I think he's probably a guy who knows how to put together a decent couple of chords in a way that works.
Is he the guy with the big black contact lenses?
Sure is, yep.
Love him.
Is this the start of frat boy rock?
It might be. It's definitely the start of like frat boy imagery. Like, it's as stupid as this looks now. Like, they sort of invented this look and like defined it as cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like it. The puffy jacket and the red hat, like turned backwards, is like douchey, but like it was cool. And like, I don't think I ever realized, like, I must have seen this music video or like half watched it like 50 or 100 times. I don't think I ever watched it until today where I realized they're just depicting Fred Durst's animal magnetism. Like, he's just walking down the street, sort of, you know, new metal rapping, and literally girls are getting out of their cars to walk behind him, like coming out of their apartment buildings. It's basically saying, you know, if you dress like this and sound like this, you're going to get all these girls too. It's weird.
Fred Durst is, and we talked in the last episode about Korn, and that like appealed to like the outcast kids more that wanted guitar music. And I can kind of get that. But even at the time, Fred Durst just seemed like such a fake to me. Like, he seemed like he was doing this tough guy posturing that even when I was a young kid, never rang true. I mean, even in the lyrics of this song, like saying like, oh yeah, I just did it all for the sex, man. Like, that's a thing you would say to like your bros to save face about the fact you're really upset about this breakup. And the end of the video where he gets arrested in what's clearly not a real arrest, like by the NYPD, like so that he could get like some tough guy cred. Everything about Fred Durst seems like bullshit, like chest puffing, posturing. I remember at the time he even like, he leaked like rumors, like he just invented rumors that he would say in interviews that he like dated Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. It's like, dude, no, you didn't. No, Fred Durst, that never happened.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that, like, he had sex with one or more of them.
Like, I think way the fuck out of the realm of possibility.
You don't think that, like, them in some kind of weird, like, let's be a bad girl. I don't want to think about it.
I think they were so micromanaged that there's no way that ever would have happened.
I don't want to give Fred Durst any credit here. But I don't want to give, like, Britney and Christine the benefit of the doubt of, like, you know, they're being manipulated to sell this image. I think that there's a distinct possibility that, like, Fred Durst was done the same service or just, you know what I mean? Like, I think that he probably wanted to, on some level, create this aura, this personality. But I feel like at some point, you know, whether it's before this video, or I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel like they were also constructed to fit this, like, other narrative.
Yeah, and it's the douchebag frat kid.
Yeah.
Even though Fred Durst looks like a 35-year-old fucking doughy idiot. Who would be the king of the land of cargo shorts? This guy or the guy from Smash Mouth?
Oh, man. I don't think Fred Durst is the king of anything. I don't remember who it was, but there's something... I remember somebody talking about, like, can you imagine Marilyn Manson at 50 and just, like, you know, still trying to do the same thing that he was doing? Like, Fred Durst now is 45. Like, what are you doing as a person?
Isn't Marilyn Manson at 70 just Alice Cooper?
Yeah, that's fair.
What did you think of the Limp Bizkit dance crew that he had in the girls in the backwards red caps and the black tank tops and the khaki UFOs doing the crotch grabs?
Gross. It's all just like it's just all terrible. Like, none of it is like now. I feel like in the time it was all like, oh, this is cool. At least I thought it was cool. But now it's just like, oh, none of this is even like remotely like clicking on any level.
Oh, we were talking about covers. You want to hear something that'll make you hate Limp Bizkit forever? Listen to their cover of Behind Blue Eyes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I might have heard that. I think I've heard that. It's whether what's in my brain is what I've actually heard or just like me imagining what that sounds like, I already...
Yeah. Were you old enough to catch the wave of like Jenkos and UFOs and stuff like that? Or were you a little too young?
I don't know what UFO... What are UFOs?
They were like Jenkos, but they were like big fluffy parachute pants almost. I think it's what it's something like what the girls in the video are wearing.
I don't remember that. I remember Jenkos. I remember soap shoes.
Did those have like bottoms on them and kids thought that they could like do skateboarding grinds on them?
Yeah, you could grind, yeah. Like on like the... Like down the hallways in schools... where the window met the floor, there was like a little like 6-inch like protrusion or whatever, and people could sort of like jump and like slide along it.
Yeah,
I never had those. And, like, it was basically the only people who had those, the only people who wore Jenkos were the people who liked Limp Bizkit, and like it wasn't necessarily like they weren't doing it. I don't think that they were wearing those jeans and wearing soap shoes because of like Limp Bizkit. I think that all just like. Into the same kind of world. They also like dirt bikes. You know, it's just those kind of kids.
Sure. Are we in agreement that no one should revisit the world of the biscuit?
Yeah, no, don't go back. I can't believe I'm about to say what I'm about to say, but like, as terrible as it is, I kind of like the fact that they have an album called Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored Water because it's the dumbest sentence that's ever been uttered, and that's the name of their album.
Yeah.
That's commitment to the worst ideal.
I mean, have I been wrong all these years thinking that that's just like, I don't want to call it a sex reference, but like a...
Isn't it butt sex?
Isn't that just butt excretions from ladies? I don't even know how to say that without sounding like a disgusting piece of shit. Fuck you,
female ejaculate?
Sure.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, chocolate starfish, obvious butthole. Hot dog flavored water, but like that doesn't make sense.
Well, it's like, oh, I'm not even gonna try to explain it because barf, but I hate Limp Bizkit.
It's fair. It's good then that the worst, the most despicable band on this album is back to back with the only band on this list at all that is relevant today. And like my favorite by far, the only band I would be like, you know, I would admit that I like, and I do genuinely like, Garbage with Special is next. I love Garbage. At least their first maybe four albums. I haven't really listened to them recently. They just put out a new album that supposedly AV Club gave an A minus to. So
oh, wow.
They're back apparently in a big way. This is like a video with a narrative.
Yeah, you know, when I was watching this video, my memory had the video for The World's Not Enough being the one where she's flying a plane and shooting people. Clearly that's not correct. So I had kind of forgotten the song or blended it in with something else. And as I've mentioned previously, I think Shirley Manson is the reason that I started to move away from having crushes on like the Britney-esque girls and having crushes on like the Fairuza Balks of the world.
Sure. I mean, Fairuza Balk is,
still in the craft.
But also Shirley Manson, like, I messaged you this morning when I was watching these videos, and I was like, oh, we're going to talk about how, like, I don't actively think about Shirley Manson, but, like, every time I think about her or see her, like, in a music video or whatever, just, like, listen to her sing, I was like, oh, I'm completely in love with Shirley Manson. Like, she's amazing. She's got a great voice. She's super cute in, like, both, like, in just sort of, like, a traditional way, but, like, also in an alt way. I mean, Garbage is just great. Like, and this song, you know, it's just... It's not one of my favorite songs of theirs, but it's a good song. I don't remember it being a huge hit, but I also feel like it was probably, like, was this in, like, an Adam Sandler movie?
I don't know. I don't think she's a fantastic lyricist, but I think that the band crafts songs, and her voice carries so well, and she has such a character in her voice that it doesn't matter.
Let me see here. I'm going to look up, hold on, Special. So Special's been in a bunch of stuff. It was in Dawson's, one episode of Dawson's Creek, because of course it was.
Well, what was it?
It was in a bunch of TV shows that I haven't heard of. Some show called The Leaks.
No.
I don't know. Oh yeah, When I Grow Up was in Big Daddy.
Oh, that makes sense.
I guess the big thing I want to point about the song, though, is that the music video ends with a to be continued.
Yeah.
Was it ever continued?
I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm thinking of, maybe they did continue it with the World's Not Enough video. I don't know.
The World Is Not Enough, that was the theme song for the Bond movie? Like, that made it?
Yeah, and in my head, the video for that was her flying a plane. I don't think that's correct. I just didn't remember the song until I listened to it, and then, yeah, it all came back.
What's weird about Garbage, I think, maybe not weird, but, like, this is how sort of shut off to the world I was. A few years ago, I was talking to somebody, and they were like, what's the first... like, major news event that you remember. And somehow, I guess just, like, how protected I was, I do not remember any reports of Kurt Cobain killing himself. I don't remember anything about OJ. The first thing I remember being on TV of, like, breaking news was Princess Diana dying. But, like, I was so shut off to the world that, like, I didn't know about Nirvana to any really great extent until, like, college, which is crazy. That's crazy, right?
It is crazy. I remember all three of those things very vividly.
Maybe it's just, if you're like 2 years older than me, then it makes sense. Like, when did Princess Diana die? Was that 95?
I remember that night very well because my friend was sleeping over my house.
So 97.
I was going to say sixth grade-ish, which, yeah, I would put it 96, 97.
August 31st, 97. I remember that. I remember stuff before that. Like, I remember sporting events, sort of, for some reason. Like Yankees Braves World Series in 96. I remember Magic Rockets NBA Championship in 96. I don't know. I mean, it just, we lived in like a bubble. Like, I was like so, which I guess is good because I was like not corrupted by the world maybe, but like I was so shut off to so much stuff. Like, I feel like I missed out on a lot of things. I feel like I remember seeing in supermarkets like OJ stuff on tabloids, but I don't like, just because that trial was so like you couldn't escape the trial. Like, I don't remember anything about Nirvana, and so like I wish I did, but I just don't.
I remember the suicide more than the music. I don't think I was old enough to appreciate the music until Nirvana was done.
I honestly don't remember when I sort of first listened to Nirvana. My history with music is weird.
Something I'm impressed about with Shirley Manson, and this video casts her as the protagonist and the rest of the bandmates as, like, the villains. And a lot of videos that have bands that have a female lead singer and a bunch of dudes do this occasionally. There's a Paramore video that does it. No Doubt's ex-girlfriend does it. So the idea of casting the beautiful female lead singer against the band was always weird to me, even at a young age. And because of that, it always kind of surprises me that Shirley Manson never pulled a Gwen Stefani and just went solo. I think she could have. I think it's cool that she didn't.
This is stupid, but do you think any of that had to do with Marilyn Manson?
Just like the fact they shared a name? I don't think that's that stupid. I don't know if that's the reason, but I think there might be some merit to that.
Or maybe she's just not, like, ego-driven. Like, to really go from a band to solo artist, you need to either be confident or cocky to the point where you can, where you say, what I could do by myself is better than what this group collectively could do.
That's, to me, that's cool. And like I said, she was never, and I don't know if she writes the lyrics for Garbage. I'm not as intimately familiar with them as other bands. But I never thought Garbage had, like I said, they never had the best lyrics, but there was always everything else that made up for it. And maybe she was aware of that in some way. And I don't know, I appreciate the fact that Shirley Manson always stayed with her group of dumb bandmates as opposed to letting them clean their cleaner pool, like I assume No Doubt is doing. The rest of those guys have probably, whatever happened to the trumpet players in No Doubt from when they were ska? Like, they're just buried somewhere.
Rest in peace.
Big thanks to Joey for coming out and recording episode 3 way back when. You can find more of Joey and myself over at cageclub.me, and you can check out Keanu Club, Cage Club, and Zack Attack, and Monkey Club, all on anywhere you would find podcasts. You can give us a like and subscribe and a rate and all of that good stuff on iTunes. We're at Twitter, Now Again Podcast, right into the mailbag, nowandagainpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get your opinions on the show. And if you like what you've heard and you know someone who you think would be into it, tell a friend. It's one of the biggest things you can do for the show is just passing it on, paying it forward. We'll be back next time with Side B, and until then, we'll catch you on the flip side. This is our-